I'm just a casual observer. I think we have a hell of a show today.
Yay.
I just want you to know, I think we have a good show. On paper, and what I'm looking at, it's going to be a good show. So I just say that to all of you in this room. Let's not screw it up.
No pressure.
All right.
We're listening to you.
All right. Here we go. Good morning. Welcome. It is a Tuesday morning, the day after a holiday. Some of you worked, some of you didn't, and yesterday, and or maybe you did a little bit of both. And it's lovely to – thank you very much. Can you do the windows in the car, too? Thank you very much. Getting a little cleanup in the console here from the coffee. Anyway, if you were out, you missed us yesterday. We're back today, and it's very nice to have you with us. We were here. But anyway, you can listen online, WAMC.org. Let me introduce the panel to you, and a reminder that you can join in on the conversation by going to panel@WAMC.org. Communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois is with us. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. Good morning. Delighted to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. The Empire Report's J.P. Miller is here as well, as he is each and every Tuesday. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Joe.
We are thrilled that Albany County District Attorney, try it again, Albany County District Attorney David Soares keeps coming back, and we're delighted. I thank you for making that commitment and coming back.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
I can't believe we haven't dissuaded you by now, and I'm thrilled that we haven't. WAMC's Alan Shartok is here in the building looking great. How are you, sir?
You think you're just saying that I look great, right?
No, you look good.
Yeah, you don't really mean it.
As a former congressman said to you just moments ago, you know, you're looking a little thin, but other than that, you look great.
Okay,
and a fresh haircut, I think.
Yeah, a fresh haircut.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Joe, if we could, about the lockbox.
Oh, I'm in, man.
Extraordinarily important. We need $180,000 in about 6 days. You would think that that's a lot of money, but not really, because during the regular fund drive, there has never been a time in recent history we haven't been making $100,000 a day.
Check.
So you would think that if people really wanted to limit the amount of time in the fund drive, wanted to show their support for the station, wanted to show how important this radio station is to all of us, and I know it is because you keep coming up to me and saying it in the street. You know, maybe I'm getting old, but people are walking up to me and saying, incredibly, thank you. Now, this never happened before, so I'm assuming it's either that I look very thin or that I'm looking old, or that I'm looking older or acting more like Larry David all the time. So the question is, can we do this?
Anybody want to weigh in on that? Anybody? Okay, good. All right.
Way being the operative word. Yeah. So what we have to do...
Way.
Yeah, way.
Oh, my gosh.
Took you a minute there, Teresa.
I was a little slow. I was reading some Trump tweets. I was multitasking.
Real time delay. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, but here's really the point. We had a wonderful... Emily Fisher gave us $5,000 if we could make it to $500,000. Now, admittedly, it's a lot of money, but I know we can do it. It's more than we've ever done before during this time, and we can do this. But here's the important thing. Today, Joe, we have a piece of news to announce that is incredible. And I wondered if you would be so kind to do the honors.
Absolutely. So don't forget, we have the $5,000 challenge. This is all to get us to the $500,000 lockbox goal by the time we start the fund drive on Monday morning at 6 a.m. So we have the $5,000 challenge, as Alan mentioned, from Emily Fisher, our dear friend. And then another dear friend from Chatham called us and said they'll add $10,000 to the challenge. So that now makes this a $15,000 challenge, which means, well, you can't, you know, don't screw that up. So knowing we really need to get the money, knowing that we need the help to get there, and it makes your donation count even more by giving toward the challenge.
I'd like everybody just to consider what sacrifice it is to give $10,000. That's a lot of money. Think all of us who give $100 or $1,000 or $5 know what the value of a dollar is. But here is somebody who comes along. We love her. It's a her. We love her. And she comes along and she says, look, I know you need it now. I'm going to help you with this. But $10,000, that is an incredible amount of money. And let me just say, this isn't the only thing she gives money to. She's been wonderful to so many people in so many places. So here it is. Emily Fisher, who gave the $5,000, is the spark plug of Simon's Rock College. There's no two ways about it. It probably wouldn't be there, or at least not in the shape it is, without Emily Fisher. And here comes our other friend from Chatham, who says $10,000. Look, these are people who really love the radio station, as so many of you do. If you can just now walk to the telephone and dial 1-800-323-9262 and hit zero, that'd be great. Or even better, go to WAMC.org. WAMC.org and use the drop-down menu. And while this is not the real reason for giving, the real reason is to keep the station alive. You can get the Harry Belafonte tickets. They are going like crazy. There are fewer and fewer left at every minute. And they are going to, it's going to be at the Egg. What's the date, Joe?
That is November 11th.
And then there's a second pair of tickets. That's
$150. For Capital Steps, which is on that date right in front of you.
Yes,
which
it, I yes, think it isn't is.
Right there.
Yes, there it is. This one over here. Yeah.
Is that November 3rd? Am I right on that?
Yeah. November 3rd. And you get a CD recording of the whole thing.
Okay, so you can check out all you have to do if you go to WAMC.org. You can find out about the tickets or whatever you want by looking at the drop-down menu. But as Alan mentioned, whatever you can give at this point is essential because you need to make your donation count even more by giving toward the challenge. $15,000 on the table that we can't afford to lose. We need you, and we need you before Monday morning at 6 a.m., but why not now? Why not do it right now?
So well said, Joe, but I want to do it the other way. Please?
Oh, you're going to be nice. All right. That's fine, too. We need, don't forget, we need to get to $500,000 or just over about $160,000, $170,000, I think we need. So we need it, and we know you'll be there. You always are. But don't make us worry more than we have to.
I'm worried.
1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262, extension 0, and someone will help you out. And as Alan mentioned, better yet, just go to WAMC.org, and it'll guide you through the process. We will have a conversation about the issues of the day right after this short break. Beginner's
mind, that's totally self-evident, you know? And to try and, you know, to listen right at that cusp of that moment, it's just such a valuable experience.
Another one gone, another story told. Another one gone, another story gets told. When things get full.
Good morning. Welcome back. I just ran out to get one extra sugar to put in my coffee, and the phones are ringing off the hook, which is nice. So
that's great.
1-800-323-9262, extension 0, or again, you can go online to help the lockbox by going to WAMC.org. A quick note about the music that we're hearing. That is the great Sam Amidon, who has a brand new album out called The Following Mountain, and he's going to be playing at the Half Moon in Hudson tomorrow night. SamAmidon.com for more information, and that'll be the music that we'll be listening to this morning. Okay, with all of that out of the way, let's get to the stuff of what's happening in our world. The Trump administration announced on Monday that it would take formal steps to repeal President Barack Obama's signature policy to curb greenhouse gas emissions from power plants, setting up a bitter fight over the future of America's efforts to tackle global warming. At an event in eastern Kentucky, Scott Pruitt, the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, said that his predecessors had departed from regulatory norms in crafting the Clean Power Plan, which was finalized in 2015 and would have pushed states to move away from coal in favor of sources of electricity that produce fewer carbon emissions. Can you imagine the gall they had of trying to go away from coal and to go to things that were cleaner? Ugh. Well, anyway, the repeal proposal, which will be filed in the Federal Register today, fulfills a promise that President Trump made to eradicate his predecessor's environmental legacy. Eliminating the Clean Power Plan makes it less likely that the United States can fulfill any part of the promise as part of the Paris Climate Agreement to ratchet down emissions that are warming the planet and contributing to heat waves and sea level rise. Mr. Trump has vowed to abandon that international accord.
I wonder if anybody else has been following along with this. If a kid goes into a grocery store and holds somebody up, David would know about this, you know, and or hurts them or shoots them, that kid is going to go to jail. No two ways about it. Does anybody else follow along with me that when you throw junk into our air, and now we're talking asthma, and we're talking heart disease, and we're talking everything else, that basically you're responsible for murdering people? Is that too far off? Is that too far off?
Yeah. What drives me absolutely insane is the fact that we are defending ourselves right now against more storms and more natural disasters than we ever have.
Mm-hmm.
A drain on our resources. And here you have the head of the EPA who is completely turning a blind eye to those facts. He's turning a blind eye to science. And you know, I guess he's going to bring back disco, too, in addition to, you know, the coal industry.
But think about it, David. Environmental Protection Administration.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, given the meetings that he has been having with mostly CEOs and certainly no scientists, would indicate where the promises are. But also, the thing that strikes me about this, of when we talk about repealing what President Obama did, most environmentalists felt lukewarm even about that because they felt it didn't go far enough. That it was a Band-Aid on a huge, huge problem. Well, now it looks like the greatest environmental thing in the world because we're not doing anything.
Yeah,
I mean that's the striking part.
Does anybody want to take me up on my murder analogy? I mean, is it too far? Is it too far that we know statistically that a lot of people, there were 10 people who died in those fires already this morning out in California.
Well, not to mention the hurricanes and right. Yeah,
exactly. And forget about asthma. And forget about the Puerto Rico, where we know that people who have diabetes and who needed infusions of different kinds didn't have the electricity to run the machinery that they were needing. Now, to me, this is really something that is indictable.
Well, you know, I have to this morning. You know, whenever I see this administration moving in such a backward direction, I always fantasize about having a cup of coffee with that Bernie supporter that under no circumstance would ever have supported Hillary Clinton. I wish for coffee on days like this with people like that, because what did you think was going to happen? What did you think was going to happen? His number one objective is to roll back any progress that was made by the previous administration. And the only thing that I look towards and the only, you know, saving grace is the fact that you have industry right now and governments, local governments, that have been moving in that direction towards clean energy anyway. And so the impact of this latest maneuver, I don't think it'll have the impact that the Trump administration was hoping for. And I say this, you know, sort of keeping both of my fingers crossed, but devastating nonetheless.
Teresa.
Yeah, I agree with you in terms of impact. I think that so there's a procedure here. There actually is process that they have to follow. He is not a dictator yet, but this was very predictable.
Not yet.
We're still TikTok. We're still in a democracy. So Trump signed an executive order saying this was going to happen a while back. And so the next step is what's happening today, which is that Pruitt, the EPA administrator, then signs this. And so now there's an opportunity for public comment. So once this is filed in the Federal Register, then there'll be an open opportunity for comment. And so I think folks should use that opportunity to comment early and often.
Do you see an irony, Teresa, in the fact that this is done to get the West Virginia vote, obviously, for example? Do you think, because those are the people who are going to suffer the most?
They're suffering the most. But it's not just the West Virginia vote. I think this is also a payoff. You've got, Wilbur Ross, who is a Commerce Secretary, who owns, how many
This is about greed, right?
This is about not believing in science. But the other thing that's going to happen is you have people like Michael Bloomberg and business people. You know, the business people are way out ahead of Trump on this. They just totally disagree with this is what we need to be doing right now. And I think that there will be an effort. There's going to be a legal effort to try to stop him. There's a process that can slow them down. And then the business community, I think, is going to keep moving forward because they understand climate change. But the other irony here is that at the same time that, what they say is, quote, it's Congress that passes legislation that gives us direction, that gives us our orders as far as how we administer the statute. So they're saying that President Obama had usurped his authority doing this. Well, on the same day, Trump is signing either today or tomorrow an executive order that's dismantling health care, which is doing exactly the opposite in terms of policy.
Well, and I understand that words mean nothing, but let me just say, just a week ago when you're in Puerto Rico, and even over the weekend, you're still saying that you're doing the greatest job and everything is fantastic and those paper towels were the best ever. Okay, fine. But then you allow the Jones Act waiver to expire, and they're not even going to extend it. And at the time when the country is in its greatest, meaning Puerto Rico is in its greatest threat, you're going to do that, and meanwhile you have more storms churning in the coast. It just seems tone deaf to, on top of that, use this as the day to announce these repeals.
And you have an EPA plan that doesn't mention the word climate change, and you've erased climate change from the website.
I think Trump obviously is not big on a moral compass. His compass, I think, is going after reelection. And I think that Trump's view is that to get reelected in 2020, he needs to have the economy continue to do really well, and that taking these regulations and burdensome compliance away from the private sector will help stimulate the economy further and help get him closer to being reelected. That people will vote based on the economy, not based on climate change.
Is this good or bad for the economy, for the U.S. economy? Because isn't this says China and Germany and everybody else is going to go way ahead of us because they're driving innovation to a clean energy economy and we're slowing it down.
Well,
how's that good for the economy?
Well, so I looked at the numbers last night before I came on the show. And so since
you did homework for the show?
I did homework.
Well, thank you very much.
So the United States carbon emissions peaked in 2005. And since then, the carbon emissions in the United States has dropped because of what David said about businesses and states are implementing this. Since 2005, we have dropped significantly. Since 2005, China has almost doubled. China is by far the worst polluter on the planet, and that if we're going to be serious about climate change, we have to get China on board to do what the United States has been doing over the last 12 years, which is reducing greenhouse gas emissions.
But China's working hard on this problem. They're way ahead of us now on solar, right?
No, they're certainly eating our lunch on solar. They're making the solar panels.
China's way ahead of us on spewing disgusting gas into the economy.
You're both right.
Into the planet. They have done it. They have doubled since 2005, while we have decreased significantly since 2005.
And there's an article in the Times this weekend that suggests that they are now going to make everybody who owns a car in China have an electric car.
Right. So it's not, there's no doubt that they have a problem, but they're facing the problem now. They weren't, but they are now.
We've been facing it for the last 12 years aggressively. We have lowered over the last 12 years while China has doubled. So I don't see any evidence that China is improving.
And can I say something about the economy, Teresa? And that is, as long as the stock market keeps going up, it's going to be used by Trump as a indices for his reelection, right? I mean, we know that. He's already saying that again and again and again.
But even ExxonMobil has turned the corner on this issue of climate change, and Donald Trump hasn't. ExxonMobil has turned the corner on this.
I agree. I agree with you that Exxon has, and other companies will too, because it's in their economic interest to do so, because everybody's looking ahead and looking towards the future. This administration, like, again, they're trying to bring back the coal industry.
And those jobs, they could sustain the coal industry, but the coal jobs aren't, because the improvements in the coal industry are the mechanization of the coal industry. That's not going to create more jobs.
But it makes sense, right? If you just take away any regulation whatsoever and tell companies that they can do whatever the hell they want to do, it would make sense then that the stock market is going to go up, right?
Certainly.
But at some point, you're going to have to pay the price for that.
Well, the calculus right now for the administration is continuing to placate those states that they won barely, mm-hmm. and they want to strengthen their numbers. That's in those right. states. And so we're talking about Pennsylvania, we're talking about West Virginia.
Well, Melania Trump's going into West Virginia today to placate West Virginia, and what's she doing? She's going to a kids' health care center to talk
Where's
about.
Where's Ivana going?
Just kidding. I was going to say. It turns out she's not really the first lady.
She's going there to talk about children's health and opioids. At the same time, is that her husband is going to sign a rule that's dismantling access to health care, which will make it harder for people to deal with opioids. We're in day 10 of the Child Health Plus program.
So what do you make of that? I mean, what do you make of the fact that the people who are being hurt the most are falling for it?
Democrats need to step up and say, this is what's happening. When Melania goes there, they have to say, these coal jobs are not coming back, but say it in a way that says, we have something else for you. The Trump team is lying to the people of West Virginia about whether the coal jobs are coming back or not. And Melania going there and saying that she cares about opioid and kids, well, they're not backing it up with policy. In fact, day 10 of the Children's Health Insurance Program being expired, day 10 of the community health funds, neighborhood health center funds, expired, and she's going to a neighborhood health center to talk about children's health.
Let me just...
You're
fine, but just let me just turn the conversation slightly, because we're talking about what's happening. So the environmental groups have come out, obviously, in force. Several states individually have said that they are going to challenge these repeals in federal courts, arguing that the move is... they're against it on both scientific and economic grounds. So... I'll ask the district attorney. How do you think this will play out in court? Well, if you're the state and you're coming in and you're saying, okay, this isn't going to work for us, how do you think it's ultimately, are they going to have any luck in the courts?
I don't think the objective is to necessarily find success in the courts. The objective is to litigate and prevent. The administration from implementing successfully. I think the writing's been on the wall on this issue for quite some time. When we pulled out of the Paris Climate Accords, I mean, you had Jerry Brown along with a number of other governors that declared war on this administration on this issue, and they pledged to continue moving forward. And that wasn't just the governors, it was the mayors as well of a number of very large cities. And so I think what you're going to see over the course of the next several months is our country is going to be bogged down on this fight along with a whole host of other fights. My caution here is that I think he's starting these battles on a number of different fronts. So look for more healthcare reform proposals, whether they're skinny repeals or others, to just surface in the next couple of weeks as we're all distracted on this issue of the environment.
I can't wait for Judith Eng to be named as the environmental administrator in the next Democratic administration.
Well, and you even have industry groups that saying that they felt it went too far because they were hoping that the that some of this would be a bit more modest so they wouldn't have to fight the court challenges.
Well, the industries are also not looking forward to the court challenges as well. Industry doesn't have time to be bogged down in litigation, but that's exactly where these attorney generals, in fact, Eric Schneiderman from the state of New York, who I think is providing tremendous leadership on this issue, you're going to see not only New York, but California and a number of other states continue to grind this issue out in the courts.
Right. I mean, you have a group of attorneys general, you have a group of mayors, you have a group of governors all focused on this, and you have them organized by Michael Bloomberg, who seems to be sort of the, not the president, but the person who's acting presidential in this process. But business needs some certainty. They need some rules. And if we're going to catch up to Germany and if we're going to stay in the innovations game, you know, we need to provide some certainty. But this is just going to drag out.
But that's not
going to
happen, right, Teresa?
No, it's not. And in fact, you have Supreme Court's hearing a case tomorrow on this on the litigation issue on a arcane portion of this of should these cases be tried in the appellate court or in the district courts. And it's just going to be there's going to be a lot of litigation.
I think the reason they did this is not to increase greenhouse gases. I think that there are a lot of regulations. There are city regulations, county regulations, state regulations. There are industry regulations. And I think that the view of the Trump administration is that the Obama's federal regulations, which were not passed by Congress, which were implemented by executive order by Obama, were cumbersome and burdensome to business, that they have to hire scores of lawyers and consultants to help accommodate these regulations. And they say, look, we're doing a good enough job at the state level. We're doing a good enough job in the business level. Let's remove this layer of cumbersome regulations and try to do anything that they can to keep business going and have a good economy in 2020 for Trump to be reelected. Only objective is to get reelected. That's all he cares about.
Because of a regulatory burden. The national standards provides companies with some certainty. The problem now is you have different states, different rules. With the businesses want certainty.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will get letters. We have many of those. And we'll get started. And then we'll move on to other topics as well. A reminder, the Lockbox still needs your help. We got a lot of calls going, but we want that to continue throughout our broadcast and throughout the day.
And hopefully, let me just say, Joe, if just in case people tried before, couldn't get through, this is the time to do it.
That's right. 1-800-323-9262. And you can always get through at wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. And we have Alan Chartok, we have David Soares, J.P. Miller, and Teresa Bourgeois. And we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We've been talking a lot about the environment, talking a lot about the climate repeal, and we have a lot of letters as a result. Alan, go to it.
I'll read some of them anyway. Let's see here. Jen says, the president is treating this planet like he treats the children of this country, just making sure that the big billowing toxicity can get itself off and pull away the birth carbon control to pave the way for despair. He doesn't care about women and children beyond the sperm, and he doesn't care about life beyond the dollar. Michael says, can't the states regulate their own coal and gas industries? Michael?
Yes.
The answer is yes, but also the federal government in terms of federalism has been defined as the sort of senior partner, even though it's not supposed to be, according to the Constitution. And if something crosses state lines, they get, David, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, they get to call the shots.
Yeah, the problem with having a patchwork of policies state by state is the same. It creates the same issues that we see with respect to handguns and other weapons. I mean, most of the crimes that are committed in the state of New York are committed with illegal guns that come from other states. And unless you have the federal government taking action that will force every state to abide by the same rules, then what you have is inconsistencies.
Annie says, I've spent the last 35-plus years at Big Moose Lake in the central Adirondacks, have seen the lake totally dead from acid rain and slowly come back due to many good EPA regulations. I'm writing to Representative Tenney and Stefanik to save these precious resources from more death. And that's from Ann. Doug says, I do not support Trump, but I totally get why he is following through on his campaign promises. After all, his base gave the Electoral College and the presidency. Keeping his base happy is his only hope of winning the Electoral College again in 2020. I think that's right.
That's true rhetorically. The problem is that these decisions are going to hurt his base. But rhetorically, he's doing what he said he was going
to
do.
At what point, Teresa Bourgeois, do we think that that base, who he is hurting in terms of their children, in terms of their toxicity of the environment, at what point do we see them switching over and saying, uh-oh, this guy, instead of helping us, is hurting us? I don't see any evidence of it yet.
Well, not yet, but I think that if the Democrats, with the help of responsible Republicans, don't stop him, then you're going to see the impact of these changes. And certainly you're beginning to see it on health care. And, you know, they're going to see it soon, those in rural areas whose health centers aren't funded because he let the health center money expire. Or today he's dismantling, you know, taking another step to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. They're going to see it soon.
But you're going to see the same folks who are impacted in that way, whose health centers will not be funded. You will see them be distracted in cultural wars by issues like the NFL and standing up for the flags and things like that.
And him blaming
and racism,
blaming it on the Congress, too. Yeah, I mean, definitely he's fighting a pretty aggressive culture war, unfortunately.
Barbara says, it is becoming increasingly apparent that the federal government will not be taking care of its citizens on any issue. We must rely on the states. 58% of women use birth control for medicinal purposes such as endometriosis, polycystic ovary syndrome, menstrual cramps, premenstrual syndrome, PMS, primary ovarian insufficiency, heavy menstrual periods, headaches, and severe acne. Many will not be able to afford the approximately $1,000 per year to pay for this medication, and it is appalling that Viagra will be continued to be covered. Thank you, New York Assemblyman Kevin Cahill, for passage of the Comprehensive Contraception Coverage Act in the Assembly. This still needs to pass in the Senate. Please call in support of Senator Bonachek's Senate Bill S-3668. Joanne says, Trump and Pruitt's EPA repeal is a threat to the public safety, yet Homeland Security is still well-funded. A correlation, not with these people, Joanne. Okay. And Robert Bob says, sorry to disagree with you, JP, but Trump's primary motive is payback to Obama for the 2011 press corps roasting. Secondarily, he may be looking for re-election, but revenge is Trump's prime motive. It's entirely personal with Trump. My reaction to that is, who knows what this guy's motive is. Motivation is.
Yeah, I mean, Pruitt's been at this for a decade. His head of EPA has been at this particular effort for a decade, litigating against.
Marianne says, please, please, please stop saying that you believe in science. It plays right into the rhetoric. I may believe in unicorns or believe that the earth is flat, but that would mean that I reject the results of scientific evidence. We need to start saying we acknowledge or accept scientific evidence. You know, one of the things that makes me a little crazy around here, folks, is that, you know, after you can't get through to a guy like Trump or the people who are supporting him, you attack your friends like us and find a reason for doing that. And I would say I object to that. Steve says,
can I take it one step further? Isn't it why the Democrats always screw up, because they start attacking each other over things like that instead of the overall issue?
Well, I certainly agree with that.
I think we all know what we mean, which is that that climate change is real. The science is real. You have to believe in science.
Yeah. Well, I'm tired. It's not a debate, is it? Why do we continue to treat the issue as if we're having a conversation, we're debating science? It's not a debate anymore. And people who are asked to engage should just stop. So the issue is resolved. The sky is up there. The ground is here. It's science. Stop talking about it.
Well, the Republican mayor of Miami, you know, he had been a climate denier for a long time. He's not a climate denier anymore.
Well, there's something that happens when you wake up in the morning, you go get a cup of coffee, and you find out that your kitchen isn't there anymore because there's been a storm.
There is that.
You're knee deep in water, literally. David
Soares. Steve says, if David Soares should be sitting down for a cup of coffee with anyone, it would probably be the staff of the Clinton campaign who are too busy tweaking their algorithm to send their candidates to Wisconsin, or he should sit down with the executive team at the DNC. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we have gotten a lot of mail about Bernie versus Hillary and this stuff. I'm going to tell you right now, anybody who did not vote in the last election, and as you all remember, I took a tremendous chance from the very beginning by publicly saying I was going to vote for Bernie, and I did. But the idea of not voting in that election as retribution seems to me to be nutty. What else can I tell you?
And I can't. So many people I talked with who were Bernie supporters. Oh, I can't possibly support her. She did this. What about the speeches? What about the emails? Okay, you know, what about climate change? What about health care?
Good morning, panel. Please view the documentary Chasing Ice and then tell me the U.S. should increase coal production. You are mistaken. It is not just the economy. It is our survival at stake. Barbara says, ever since I read Dark Money by Jane Mayer, I am sad to conclude us little folks have no say in anything. What can we do? Three question marks. David says, loosening environmental regulation will not automatically make the stock market go up. Sure, coal-related stock will go up, but stocks of companies that make pollution controls or clean the environment will go down. I don't know that that's true. Does anybody else know? I mean, I'm not watching those, but it's a very good thing for us, indices for us to be watching.
Well, the economic future is in clean energy. That's why you have people like Michael Bloomberg and other business people. I mean, that's why you see ExxonMobil turning the corner on this, because they understand that the future is in clean energy. That's where the money is.
Hi, panel, says Ricky, or Rick. I could understand the derision of Pruitt, but who is going to be the first to stop driving their polluting vehicles or flying in planes or going on Caribbean cruises? We have to lead by example. Then we can start pointing fingers. At least that's what the Republicans will say. Laura says, China damages the environment more than any other country. Thanks to Trump, we are now contributing to that horror. For that horror, as I learned from listening to the roundtable, the stock market is not an accurate marker of the financial well-being of the country. It's ephemeral. It's gambling. It isn't real. And Dan says, just like the last administration, nothing getting done. The ACA was basically written by the insurance industry, and no one can afford it. So health care that you can't afford is not health care. Single payer, and I'm still here dreaming. And by the way, Dan, I agree with you. I think that that's where we have to go. Russ says, that's it. I'm out of here. I need stability and consistency. I'm moving to Russia. How about the AMC signal in Vladivostok?
Jill says, very specific. Very specific. Okay.
Jill says, let's not fool ourselves. I feel one of the main goals is to do away or undo everything Obama did. They couldn't prevent the first black man from becoming president. He turned out not to be a one-term president. So they'll just have to make it appear as if he was never president by rolling back everything he did. He was a successful president, and they just can't stand it. That's the letters I got.
That's a lot. That's good. All right. Thank you very much. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. All right. Let's move on to some other issues, unless anybody has anything else on what we were just talking about. No? Okay. Good. So the other issue, we only have 5 minutes before the break, so let me bring up something that only deserves about 1 minute, but and that is the whole Ivana Melania flap. So to promote her new book, Raising Trump, about parenting Trump's three eldest children, Ivana Trump gave a Monday interview to Good Morning America in which she made some comments sure to raise the hackles of the woman occupying the role of wife of Donald. And Ivana said, I'm basically first Trump wife, okay? I'm the first lady.
Okay, but let me go first. I'll take my half a minute. And that is clearly that if I'm Donald Trump and I'm sitting in the White House and I see one more bright light over here and I see one more dissonance going on at the same time that he's ruining the environment, I'm a happy man.
Okay, but instead of just letting that go, Melania takes a page out of her husband's playbook and goes after the first wife.
Exactly, and don't think he didn't say to her, now's the time to go.
But But which I don't also understand the story, because from also in the book, she says that they talk every day, right? Or they talk every week?
Once a week.
She has his number. But she doesn't like to use it all the time because it will just make Melania jealous.
Right, but they said they have regular conversations and she gives her advice on various things that are going on.
And most people think that Trump is a creep, right? So I don't understand why she's kind of advertising and proud of the fact that she still has this good relationship with Trump. You'd think that she'd be, you know, saying horrible things about him.
So I don't really understand it either.
But it is interesting. You know, some people have contentious relationships after they get divorced. Some people have good relationships. It is an interesting dynamic that she is the mother to Ivana, Donald Jr. and Eric, who are obviously people that Trump has a huge amount of respect for and works closely with in the company.
But who may end up in jail.
Now, not to interrupt you, but just because we're up against the clock, but you, as the proprietor of the Empire Report, look, that was your top story. I mean, that
It was. It's
you trumped everything.
It's simply an attention grabber. It's a battle between Ivana and Melania. Yes.
It's a Kardashian story, agreed. And you put it there.
Yes.
And Ivana Melania sounds like a little skin rash as far as I'm concerned. And why would you write a book? Claiming credit for raising those three children?
Get money.
Make a lot of money. So when Ivana says, when Melania says, quote, "This is unfortunately only attention seeking and self serving noise." When I read that, I thought she was talking about the Trump and Vice President's NFL stunt.
That's right. Yes. It was quite a stunt. You got 2 minutes for that?
Expensive stunt.
Yeah, an expensive stunt. We're now up to $244,000.
Well, that's just the airfare. That's just the airfare. That's not the Secret Service advance work or anything.
That would have been regardless of where he went, right?
Well, that's pretty expensive to do.
And can you imagine if Hillary had
And then
done
there's
this?
A local there's oh, the God. Local impact
the local,
too,
yeah, what
because the police
locally?
Officers who have to then, you know, reroute traffic. There's a lot of overtime that's not reimbursed to local governments for having
what did
that
it cost
kind of
Indianapolis to have that visit?
Exactly. And it was and by all accounts that's exactly what it was. It was a stunt.
Well, because they started fundraising about yesterday, the RNC immediately started fundraising off of it. I mean, it was a pre-planned
well,
stunt.
The other thing too is that you're talking about the team.
But
that
we're getting away from Ivana, Melania.
You know what?
I'm sorry.
Anything to get away from.
You really like
to get
so
away from those
it,
folks
Joe?
Who continue to monetize the White House. Anything to get away from. That.
But well, also, it demeans the it. You know, it's just another layer of demeaning the White House. I understand shiny object, but it's more demeaning the presidency.
Okay, we are at the top of the break. When we get back, we'll talk about other more meaningful stuff. I promise.
You want to talk Melania, don't you?
Just a little.
What about the shoes?
What about the shoes
will she be wearing today?
We'll find out the answers to all of those questions and more when we return after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok is here. Albany County District Attorney David Soares joins us. The Empire Report's J.P. Miller Communications Consultant Teresa Bourgeois.
What a great panel. Excepting me, but I got to tell you that these people who are here today are so sensible and so smart.
The best and the brightest.
Except for that Melania story on drafting.
We could talk more about that.
I know you really want to talk more about Melania. All right, go ahead, Joe. Talk about Melania.
No, I do want to remind people that we are trying to fill the lockbox. We made a lot of money so far this morning. We want to continue that. Please do whatever you can. We have the challenges. Alan, talk about the challenges and why they're so important.
Can you imagine? $5,000 from our friend Emily Fisher, who said, look, this is an important institution. I'm going to do everything I can. $5,000 is a lot of money. And then our friend from Chatham comes up with 10 grand. Think about that. That is an incredible amount of money. So now there's $15,000 if we can do this by first thing on Monday morning. Look, folks, put something in and your $5. I once forgot to vote in an Alford, Massachusetts election, and my candidate lost by one vote.
no.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And the boss of the town called me up, and boy, he was uncompromising in his and in his anger, the fact that I hadn't shown up. And of course, he was right.
So you can show up. All you have to do is call 1-800-323-9262. You can also go to the website. That's the easiest way, wamc.org. It'll say pledge now. You press that, and it'll guide you through. If you want any of the tickets for Harry Belafonte or for the Capitol Steps or anything else, you can just go to the drop-down menu.
But you got to do it fast. I'm sorry for interrupting, because those tickets are we started earlier with the Capitol Steps, and they're almost gone.
62 tickets left.
And
wow.
The Harry Belafonte.
So 31 pairs.
Going out the window.
There you go. So everybody, do what you can do, and do it at WAMC.org. Or 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262. All right, let's move on to other stuff. You got a letter or two, and then we'll do
letter two.
Other stuff.
And this came from Bobby and Troy. CBS Evening News reported last night that China had doubled its solar capacity last year, and that is now twice as big as the U.S. capacity.
Exactly.
Greenpeace says they are installing the equivalent of a soccer field of solar panels every hour, every day. So they are working hard to move away from coal, and that's Bobby.
Absolutely, right, Bobby. And
Richard says, the Bernie versus Hillary debate is not an unhealthy debate to have within the Democratic Party, particularly if Hillary and Bernie does not seek the Democratic nomination in 2020. Let me read that again just to make sure I got that right. The Bernie versus Hillary debate is not an unhealthy debate to have within the Democratic Party, particularly if Hillary and Bernie do not seek the Democratic nomination in 2020. Richard, I don't think the debate is any more about whether or not which is better. That's perfectly legitimate, isn't it? But the debate is, did anyone stay home, like I just stayed home with that one vote that I told you about, stay home, and now has to take individual responsibility for who's in the White House?
And we know people stayed home, and we know that the did not vote party prevailed.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's extraordinary that...
Because they were very vocal about the fact that they were going to stay home.
A lot of people don't know this, Teresa, and I just want to second what you've just said. Over half the country do not vote in the presidential election, which is our most popular election.
Well, a big thing is Barack Obama in 2008, he pulled out a bunch of people that didn't usually vote. That's a huge indicator of who's going to win the presidency, of getting people that don't usually vote out to the polls. Barack Obama had a historic election in that
regard. How did he do it?
In 2008. He had a message that resonated with people
offering
hope. Now, I think Trump also, in 2016, he got a bunch of people who don't typically vote out to the polls by getting them excited as well. And so whoever in 2020 is going to win, whether it's Trump or the Democrat opponent, I hope that the Democrats, if they want to beat Trump, bring out someone that is really going to motivate people and bring an inspiring, exciting message.
Now, how about identity politics and all of this? This is an interesting concept. We know that one of the reasons Barack Obama won was because, frankly, he was black. A whole bunch of people who ordinarily did not vote because they didn't believe in the system came out and said, okay, for once we have something that we can hope for here and we have a candidate that we can support. Message, as far as I'm concerned, who should be running for president or vice president of the United States right now? Now, you know, start thinking along those lines and realistically, it may not be perfectly solid in terms of what we want in terms of identity politics, but who would be a good black candidate to run for either president or vice president of the United States? I can look at least one former governor of Massachusetts who I would think, Deval Patrick, who would be an extraordinary candidate, a man who of great integrity, who I would love to see run.
Well, Deval Patrick, I think, certainly is a person who we should keep our eye on. I think the identity politics that will prevail in the next election is the identity politics and the candidate that can identify with America. I think right now, if we were to apply the same tactics that were applied in this last election, I think it failed us because it divided too many people along identity political lines. I think that the next candidate has to have a unifying message about being an American, what that truly means, and it has to be a message about the future of America that includes so many of those different people. I don't think that a candidate is going to prevail because that candidate is either going to be a female or African American or any other member of any other class. I think that the next candidate has to have a unifying message, and it just can't be a message of we hate Donald Trump.
Then how would you account, David Soares, for the fact, because I have such great respect for you and your perspective, but how would you account then for the fact that so many minority voters came out and voted for Barack Obama?
Oh, they did come out and vote for Barack Obama on the identity politics issue. And of course, you know, we're talking about, you know, 8 years ago, so many people did come out. But his message over and above, you know, what he looked like, his message was a message that was a rallying message. They were Republicans. They were conservative Republicans that were moved by that message. So I think that I think to look at identity politics alone is to do a great disservice to the president.
I agree with you. If Jesse Jackson had been the candidate for president of the United States, he would not have won.
Right. I also think that we have to have a better understanding of some of the mechanics of the politics that are going on now. By that, I mean a better handle on voter suppression, which I think the Republicans are very aggressive and very effective at. And I think we have to get a better handle on Russian interference with the election and outside interference. But also, we have to understand how tools like Facebook were used very effectively. If anyone didn't see it, the 60 Minutes piece on the Trump use of Facebook, just like Barack Obama's team used technology very, very effectively with micro-targeting. Some of the things that the Trump folks did with Facebook is pretty astounding. You know, most people focus on Trump's use of Twitter, but it's really use of Facebook that drove this.
So, Teresa, let me ask you this, because I watched that piece too. And, you know, I found that the guy, whatever his name was,
Pascal,
you know, was not exactly unattractive. I mean, I think he sounded reasonable and all the rest of it and what he was doing. However, it was a very alarming story. So from my perspective, I kept thinking about the American people. Were they?
I kept thinking about the Mercers. Go ahead.
I kept on thinking the fact that the Hillary campaign said no.
Yeah, they said no. They did. But let's assume for a second, if you
know about an embed, but not yeah. no you not.
Well, they
using
thought it
Facebook.
Was dangerous.
Well,
they didn't want an embed.
Well, they could have somebody come in and teach them how to do that, so that they could have had better placement, and they didn't do it.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to know how important this story is to the American people. Is this the kind of thing that makes people sit up and take notice, even though it's a huge story, or is it something that will disappear into the ether?
Well, I think for the average voter, they're not paying a lot of attention. But for people who focus on the mechanics of an election, they darn well better.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to I had a fascinating conversation about a month or so ago with a person who's way out, you know, on the far ends of how technology works and computers and data mining and such, and was saying, you know, that the Clinton campaign was not as aggressive in using new technology as the Obama campaign had been. But the technology is changing all the time.
They weren't, and Facebook drives more traffic on the internet than anything else. And the fact that Trump and his team were able to harness that with far less resources than Hillary and far less people. You know, Hillary had a huge team, dozens of people working on this, former Obama people. It's a huge story. I think that the next Democrat candidate in 2020 will try to outdo Trump on this in a huge way.
So technique is not the only issue here. The issue is also the candidate. So it may have been that Hillary had all these people working and that they had some technique, but she wasn't Barack Obama.
You need gasoline for the fire. Mm. You need a lot of gasoline, and Trump had gasoline for the fire. Hillary didn't have a lot of gasoline.
Well, but the other question is, are you going to, you know, what are the future rules of the road? Because the Trump rules of the road, you can say anything, you know, you can lie all the time, you know, say things to your constituents that have no meaning. Is that going to be the new rules of the road completely?
I think so. I think because there's been no political consequences for a person who consistently lies, I think he lies more than he actually he says anything else. I think because there's been no political consequence, I think that opens the door for a number of other folks. I mean, look at the race in Alabama, and Judge Roy Moore. I mean, I don't think that there will be any consequences for that particular candidate, and should he prevail, I think all the rules are out the window. I think the greater issue here is the unfettered, unregulated, you know, internet that just happens to be the most powerful communication device in the 21st century, and our government has completely shied away from it. In my world, we are certainly dealing with two colossal, two giants of industry that are impacting on the way that we investigate. I mean, the idea that your encryption now can prevent prosecutors and law enforcement with probable cause from getting access to a person's phone is just absurd. But that further demonstrates the amount of influence that dollars from Silicon Valley is having in our government. And so now, on the one hand, you have the NRA that has taken a substantial chunk out of our ability to regulate, guns. You have the fossil fuel industry that's, you know, cornered another segment of the market. But here comes Silicon Valley with yet a third. And so at the end of the day, you have to say, what is representative government?
But, I'm sorry, Terry, but just real quick, to Alan's point about does anybody care about this stuff? So when you have this story about you're looking at the
manipulation,
the 60 Minutes piece, and right, and what people are using, but then this is not really that much of a separate story from what we're talking about, the other story that Google founding the accounts, looking through and finding all of the Russia ad stories. So I don't know. It doesn't seem like we are paying attention, but it seems like we should pay attention to it.
We should be paying tremendous attention. I mean, no one really paid attention when there was deregulation back in the Bush administration, when Colin Powell's son was running the FCC, and they deregulated, ownership of radio and television. No one paid any attention. No one even blinked. But I think when you see the influence that Fox has had on politics, when you see the newer companies that are coming in and buying a lot of local stations, I think we all now realize that we should be paying attention to access and who's delivering messages. I think the internet, where most people are getting their information from these platforms, I think we have to take a second look at that and do so rather quickly.
I don't think
one fast reaction to that, if I can, Teresa, and that is, as somebody who watches this stuff pretty carefully, the FCC stuff, I have to tell you, it's fascinating to me that you're right, David. The right wing brought up those radio stations, those commercial radio stations, and their listenership is going down, down, down. And public radio's listenership is going up and up and up, which, of course, shamelessly, I have to say, is one of the reasons we have to keep it going.
Absolutely.
But I don't think people understand how they're being that they are being influenced. They don't see these as political ads because they're not marked as political ads. All of this Facebook activity, none of that was marked as political advertising, and that's one of the issues. Should it be just as any ad on TV is marked as a political ad, do you have to then mark any of this? I mean, they $70 million in Facebook ads, none of them marked as political advertising, but they did influence, and they did distort. Now, one of the test cases is this December election with Roy Moore in Alabama. And I think every member of Congress, every Republican senator, they should be asked, do you support him? Do you support Moore? I mean, think about the things that he's talked about.
Doesn't matter. He's getting elected by the people of his state. Doesn't matter what the senators, whether they support him or not.
And we know what
their constituents need to know. Are you for or against this guy? Do you think that a guy who says the things that he says and has done the things he's done should hold elective office
in
the U.S. Senate?
Okay, and you're a United States Senator, Teresa, and you're standing up there, and somebody from your press conference raises their hand and says, do you support Roy Moore? Is it Roy Moore?
Yeah.
Roy Moore. And your answer is hubba, 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 hubba.
Right. But they should be held accountable for that.
Oh, sure. A lot of people should be held accountable for what they're doing these days.
He's a guy who says that a Muslim should not be able to hold a seat in the United States Congress. If you're Muslim, you shouldn't be able to hold a seat in the United States Congress. That's one of the things he talks about. He 9/11, you know, he said 9/11 happened because, quote, because we've distanced ourselves from God.
Right.
That's what Roy Moore, this guy, maybe elected senator, says 9/11 happened because, quote unquote, we distance ourselves from God.
What do you mean, maybe elected senator? He's going to be elected senator.
He will be elected senator. But the greater issue for me is when you look at people like our president, when you look at people like Moore, you have to wonder what's going on with the electorate, right? Obviously, this man's message is appealing to them. I mean, it's the people from Alabama.
The Access Hollywood tape didn't seem to matter to people.
And people, I couldn't believe when Trump won the number of votes from women that he won. I mean,
That's
it was
right.
just unbelievable. So people are obviously having to compromise on their values, and they're putting certain values ahead of others, which is why they're electing these people to government.
Or because we don't have an ERA. Is that right? ERA? The
Equal Rights Amendment?
Equal Rights Amendment. In this country, there's a reason for that, because women, too many women voted against it.
We have 15 seconds. Did you want to end
okay,
with a letter?
Okay, hey, panel, love the show. I hear you about the non-voters. However, because of the electoral system, and since we're in New York State, if all the non-voters of New York had voted and voted for Hillary Clinton, the national result would be no different. Sigh. That's from Avery. Yes, but
Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. The non-voters who didn't vote in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, if the non-voters had voted, who were Democrats.
All right.
Message was out.
We wouldn't be talking about the things we're talking about today.
We're out of time. Thanks to all. We'll be back.